Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins.
Welcome to the latest episode of the realm of heroes and monsters, Storytime with me, your host, author, artist, and all-out nerd, A.P. Fuchs. So yeah, welcome to the show. If you're a new listener, well, there's lots of episodes to check out prior to this one, and there'll be episodes to check out after this one. And yeah, feel free to explore, look at the listings, find something you like, and give it a listen, you know, get a good story in it. That's the whole point of this, right? This podcast is meant for you to just have a moment to sit back, relax, put your head back, close your eyes, and get told a story and imagine it. And this is for you. So yeah, hope you do that and hope you enjoy. The story to come is an early story that I wrote. You're going to hear about it in the story behind the story segment. It's a little bit longer, that particular segment, just because I kind of rambled a little bit. But at the same time, what I'm offering is the efforts behind the story and why I did the story as I did. This is called The Beat. It's coming up right away. And it was an experiment in trying to play with the reader's mind a little bit, try to play with my own mind a little bit. And it's definitely one of those you decides story ending type items. So yeah, stay tuned for the story, because I want you to come to the conclusion on your own as to what really occurs in the story. So there's that. And lastly, we're just recording this with the nerd stuff in the background here. If you're doing this watch, listen version on YouTube, studio is under revamp at the moment, 2024 revamp studio change, because I've been in the same studio setting, so to speak, for 5 years. And so I'm redoing things to change the space, give myself a fresh sort of environment to do things. And right now it's not a place to do any recording. So we're doing this out in the open, out in the wild, so to speak. Yeah. Anyway, upcoming, The Beat. Pay attention. Tick, tick, tick. The Beat. When Granddad called me up and invited me to the family cabin for the weekend, I was surprised. Well, it wasn't actually the family cabin. It was his, but he let all his kids and their children use it. He and Grandmama had purchased a lot up by Lake Winnipeg sometime in the early 80s. With the help of his two daughters and their husbands, over the course of a summer, the cabin had been built. The cabin's a fair size. It runs around 50 feet long, 25 feet wide, the ceiling starting at 10 feet by the door, rising to 16 in the middle, then descending back down to 10 feet at the other end. I'm proud to say it had been my suggestion, when I was around 16 or so, to make off with the ivory paneling on the outside and instead artificial dark brown logs, giving an old pioneer, early settler kind of feel. I'm 18 now. Granddad's 74. Grandmama is only 67, if you consider such a number as only when it comes to an elderly person. Someone once asked me, while I was helping Grandmama loading groceries into her cart at a supermarket, how old she was. The guy asking had guessed by her looks and zeal in her voice that she was in her mid-50s. When I told him her real age, his eyes went wide, obviously not believing me. She kept a positive attitude, and that impressed me, especially now since Granddad had fallen ill, lung cancer manifesting itself to its full extent as a result of his 40-some-odd years as a smoker. Granddad had been in the hospital twice, the second time being just 2 nights ago. Like I said before, I was surprised when he called me up today and asked in his raspy, gurgly voice, his throat burnt or crisp from years of hot smoke, no doubt. "I just got out of the hospital, Robbie, and I was wondering if you wanted to come up to the lake with me this weekend." "Do you really want me to come?" I said. "Or do you only want me there because I always have a pack of Winston's with me?" He chuckled, knowing I was onto him. Ever since he had come down with cancer, Grandmama had forbade him to buy any more cigarettes. "You're not going to help yourself to your deathbed as long as I'm around," she would scold him. Of course, Granddad, playing the sheepish innocent, obliged to her demands, only to secretly stash a cigarette here and there around the house. Knowing that he would do such a thing, Grandmama scoured the house top to bottom and found every one, yelling at him each time a cigarette was found. Granddad didn't learn his lesson, and often came to me, always complaining of a nick fit. Grandmama would have a bird if she knew I was slipping Granddad smokes, but I figure, who is she or I to deprive him of one of his most favorite pleasures in life? In return for my supplying him with cigarettes, he treated me to different things, taking me out for breakfast, giving me gas money, buying me a lighter when mine conked out, things like that. So far, our secret trade had gone on beneath Grandmama's notice. However, since Granddad's recent turn for the worse, I decided that I did not want to be responsible for his next visit to the ICU. "I'll come along," I told him, "but I can't give you smokes anymore." Come on, Robert." "Okay, you win. Just don't smoke in front of me, okay?" he said, sounding as if I had just broken his heart. "You know I can't let you smoke because I care about you, right?" He sighed. "I'll pick you up Friday night around 8. We'll be at the lake before 11. I told him that sounded fine. This should be an interesting weekend. Maybe I'll leave my cigarettes at home for the next 2 days, just to be safe. The gravel seemed to crunch louder than usual when Granddad and I pulled into the cabin's driveway. It was more like a short, small, stone-covered path than a real driveway, the path not far from the road. I watched the headlights from Granddad's Ford pickup bathe the cabin with a yellow glow, transforming the dark brown of the cabin into a deep tan. In all my years of coming here, I've never arrived at night. Usually family trips to the lake were either done Saturday morning or afternoon. Plenty of daylight left when we arrived. Granddad put the truck in park, idled it, and gazed at the cabin as if it was a lost relative. And, in a way, I suppose it was. The cabin was as much family as both of us. After a few minutes, he turned the motor off and got out of the truck. I got out too, rounding to the rear and pulling my duffel bag off its bed. Hoisting the bag strap over my shoulder, Granddad, with a hard pat to my back, gave me the key to the front door. He told me he had to run to the outhouse at the left of the property, and he didn't want me standing in the chilly night air waiting for him. Granddad went off, disappearing into the night. I watched him dissolve into the darkness and waited a moment in case anything went wrong. I didn't know if he was able to manage himself as well as he used to since he had gotten sick. Once Granddad was out of view for a few seconds, I adjusted the bag strap on my shoulder and made my way for the door. A sudden gust of cool wind sent a shiver up my back and down my arms. Bad timing, too, because my eyes had been locked onto the three black windows of the cabin, one for the kitchen, one for a bedroom, the last for the living room. The windows seemed to draw my eyes into their void, only darkness emanating from them, extinguishing the pale moonlight that shone against them. I walked up the two steps leading to the front patio landing. The screen door squeaked on its hinges as I opened it, revealing the door I had the key to. I stole a glance at the window to my left before entering, then perked an ear for Granddad. Blackness glanced back, and silence hung on the air. I didn't know why I was so afraid. Actually, I did know why. Too many scary movies and violent comic books. Disregarding the thought of an ogre with a cloak made from human skin waiting inside for me, I put the key into the lock, heard it click, and went in. I turned on the light. The cabin lit up. There was only two light switches on the other side other than those for the bedrooms and bathroom, one for the front door and main living area, the other for the back porch. I slid my shoulder out of the strap, my bag falling to the always dirty welcome mat beneath me. Any childish fears I had when standing outside vanished. It felt good to finally be back here. Startling me out of my lamentation, the screen door behind me screeched open. "So, are you coming in all the way, or are you just going to stand there like a bellhop?" Granddad asked, putting a hand on my shoulder. "All the way," I breathed, feeling as if I just did something wrong. He appeared all right. His leathery skin was a bit paler than usual, but he looked healthy enough. He lovingly smiled at me, the crow's feet by his eyes rising up. The gray hair on top of his head was slicked back, as if he had just gotten out of the shower. Picking up my bag, I shuffled off into the room where I'd be staying. The room was across from his. I turned on the light and tossed my bag on the bed. The coils of the mattress squeaked from the weight. My room was plain. Pale yellow walls, a curtainless window, a small closet and an oak dresser with a mirror, all blending in nicely with a worn dark brown carpet of the floor. The carpets. That was another thing I enjoyed about this place. Each room had a different colored carpet, most of them similar to the brown one in my room, but different shades of brown nonetheless, except for the floor of the kitchen, the floor sharing the floor of the living room, which was covered in light tan tiles. The inside of the family cabin was a perfect testimony to the earth tone theme of the 70s and early 80s. Taking a few of my things out of my bag, I heard Granddad clanking around in the kitchen. He was probably preparing us a snack of some sort and a couple of beers. He had come up here last weekend to stock the fridge and pantry, he said. Putting the sweatshirt on a hanger, I watched myself in my peripheral in the mirror to my left. It took a moment after hanging up the sweatshirt to actually look at myself squarely. I never liked what I saw when I looked in the mirror, and the reason I didn't like it had nothing to do with my appearance. In the end, it all came down to one thing: a child's vision of himself as to how he would look when he grew up. Back between the ages of 7 and 10, I always envisioned myself growing up into your well-built, stubble-cheeked, deeply tanned, just the right amount of blonde highlights in the hair, underwear model gentleman. Instead, I looked like his younger brother. Pale-faced, sweaty-banged, thin-shouldered, beer-bellied wino with glasses and an AC/DC t-shirt. So much for being Don Juan. High school finished in June, and I still had a month before first semester at the University of Winnipeg. I wasn't sure, really, what I wanted to be when I grew up, but in your first year of post-secondary, that didn't matter. Everyone was enrolled in some University One program that came into being a few years back. It's basically grade 12 all over again, but maybe a little tougher. Granddad hollered from the other room, telling me to get in the kitchen. I shouted back, saying I'd be right there. The kitchen table was neatly set, two frosted beer mugs set on the opposite ends, a black ashtray in the table's middle. Granddad turned from the counter, a beer bottle in each hand. He set a bottle beside each mug. I took my seat at the end of the table nearest the door. Granddad always sat at the end of the table farthest from the door. Always. Don't ask me why. He tilted his mug as he emptied the bottle. I did the same. He held up his mug as if in a toast, then took a large, satisfying swig. After, he let out an audible, "Ah." I took a swig of my own beer, the carbon of the beer stinging my throat on its way down. "I say we should turn in early tonight," Granddad said. "And tomorrow, we'll get up early and hit the lake across the way there." He gestured to the large window opposite us that looked out onto the back property. The yard extended about 100 feet, then tapered off into a man-made lake, cleaned yearly, as well as stocked with fish. A 2-minute walk from the yard, and there was a path that led up to an old rickety bridge you could sit on, hang your line from, and wait until you caught something. "Sounds like a plan," I said. He nodded and took another gulp. I could tell he wanted a cigarette by the way he slouched in his chair, one hand gripping his mug, the other resting on his belly. He looked off somewhere through the kitchen window, as if he could see anything through the darkness that filled it. His eyes went from the window to me, to the window again, then back to me, checking to be sure that I knew what he wanted, but was too shy to ask for. It was kind of amusing at first, seeing how long he could keep up his subtle yet obvious hints that he wanted a smoke. Soon it became annoying. Though Granddad was your jack-of-all-trades grandfather, I found it disturbing he was acting so childlike. Knowing it wasn't a good idea, I reluctantly removed my cigarette package from my jeans pocket and dropped it on the table. I couldn't leave the smokes at home. Fishing and smoking go hand in hand. Granddad meek like he didn't notice, but I could see his eyes salivating at the package of coffin nails. Indulging him, I made show of removing a cigarette, putting it behind my ear, and putting another between my lips. I paused, building his anticipation. His eyes took me in, then peered back out the window. I thought to toy with him, but decided against it, figuring Granddad had already enough torture from being in the ICU. I held the pack out to him, proffering him a cigarette. He made like he didn't want it, but then leaned forward in his chair, his arm extended, his fingers just touching the edge of my pack. "You sure?" he asked. "Yeah," I said. "Go ahead. Just don't tell Grandmama." He smiled his famous Granddad smile, the stubble on his cheeks scraping against each other in the folds of his skin. "Thanks, kiddo." He took the smoke, and I slid my lighter across the table. He took a swig of his beer and lit up. I grabbed an ashtray of my own from the cupboard over the sink, then sat back down. Granddad said that he was having a good weekend so far. So was I. It was sometime deep into the night, around 3:30, when I heard the tick-tick-ticking of a clock. Hearing such a patterned noise in the silence of a house, in this case, cabin, was normal. What bothered me about the ticking was that, as far as I was aware, Granddad never kept a ticking clock at the cabin. As old-fashioned as he was, his clocks were digital. He was also a light sleeper, and even though the ticking was relatively quiet, it'd still be enough to wake him. I wondered if he was awake now and, perhaps, since I haven't spent the night here in so long, if Grandmama had insisted he install the antique analog clock that had been stationed above the stove at their apartment since who knew when, as a little taste of home. Maybe it was that old clock that was making the ticking. Granddad wasn't one to be pushed around by anyone, except by Grandmama. She had Granddad wrapped around her old and wrinkled finger. I once asked Granddad why he cowered under her like a puppy in trouble with his master. He responded with a wink. "'Tis called love, kiddo. I may not like it, but let I be doomed if I don't make her smile by doing what she wants now and then. You'll know what I mean when you find yourself a cute little honey one day. I guarantee that. Just you wait and see, boy." Rubbing the sleep from my eyes, I rolled over and tried to ignore the tick, tick, tick that seemed to have grown louder over the past 10 seconds. I cleared my mind and waited for the drowsiness hanging over me to turn into full-fledged fatigue and whisk me away to la-la land, far away from the noise. I started to slip away, that good feeling of inevitable sleep setting in, when the ticking grew even louder. Granddad would surely be awake now. How could he not be? $40 said he'd shut the clock up in a minute or two, and he and I would be back asleep. In the morning, neither of us would remember waking. Tick, tick, tick. The ticking was too loud, and I could only imagine how loud the ticking was on the other side of my closed door. "Come on, Granddad, hurry it up," I thought. "Turn that clock off." Tick, tick, tick. I groaned and threw my blankets back, the cool breeze coming from my open window immediately attacking all the skin that wasn't covered by my boxer shorts. I took a moment and let the goosebumps seize me before getting out of bed. There was enough light in my room to help me find the door. Shivering, I stepped out and crept through the dark gray of the cabin, the shapes of the furniture vaguely outlined in the subtle amount of available light. I was right, too, about the ticking being louder out here. Sounds always seem louder in the dark, too. Who knew why? Granddad's door was partially open. He was asleep. I could hear his snoring, which was more like a garbled wheezing. Not wanting to disturb him, I followed the sound of the ticking. It got louder toward the back porch. Why the clock was back there, instead of out from where it was practical, I didn't know. The door to the back porch was closed. There was no lock. Only the door that led from the back porch to the back lock had a lock. Not that that lock would help anyway. It was one of those rinky-dink locks that all you had to do was push the knob, then turn it to lock it from the inside. A burglar worth his loot would have no trouble getting through that impenetrable security. "I remember the day when we didn't have to lock our doors at night," Granddad once told me. He got a lock for the back door simply because all the neighboring cabins had one. And he had a lock on the front door too, so might as well make them match, right? Anyway, I opened the door. The ticking doubled in volume. I glanced toward Granddad's room to see if he was awoken by it. He wasn't. He was still wheezing in his sleep. Flicking on the light, I stepped onto the porch, my eyes adjusting to the brightness. As they did, I scanned for the source of the sound that had interrupted my sleep. It seemed to be coming from the back corner, beneath a box of historical romance novels that belonged to Grandmama. There were hordes of other junk in the porch, too. A couple of broken chairs, an old kitchen table, Granddad's toolbox, blankets, and other old people antiquities that made you wonder why they even bought such things to begin with. Like a faded porcelain ballerina that's missing a leg? I don't know. As I made my way to the corner, I stepped carefully between boxes of more junk, tripping over a couple. The ticking was far louder here. It couldn't be a clock. Sounded more like a bomb, as if I'd ever heard a bomb tick before, only in the movies. I bent over and wrapped my hands around the back edges of the box of novels. With a mighty heave, I lifted the box and placed it on the vintage kitchen table beside me. I was right. There was something beneath the box of Grandmama's books. Another box, without a lid. On top of it was a well-worn, orangey-red towel draped over a smaller box. With the tips of my forefinger and thumb, I picked off the towel. Tick, tick, tick. And there it was, a well-polished, antique wooden box. The box had a lid. The clock's inside. It better be, because I didn't like the idea of ticking coming from somewhere else in that cramped little porch. It'd be a lot of work to find it. I picked up the box and opened its lid. Tick, tick, tick. It wasn't a clock. It wasn't a bomb, either. It was a metronome, secured in a blue velvet mold. Its wooden cover was absent. I watched as its arm rocked back and forth across the ivory front, counting the beat to a song that wasn't playing. Since we had one of those things at home, I knew how to turn it off. Granddad's wheezing suddenly increased. It sounded like he was panicking in his sleep. A bad dream, perhaps. His wheezing got louder. I wondered if I should go and check on him, make sure he's all right. I didn't want him back in the ICU. He coughed and began wheezing again. I should go check on him. I suppressed the arm and replaced it under the bracket at the top of the unit. Then, silence. Granddad's wheezing faded. The next morning, I woke to the neighbor's dog barking and to the twittering of a small bird outside my window. Groggy, I checked my watch. It was close to 10 a.m. Knowing that if I slept in, Granddad would have my head, I got up and went to the bathroom before going to the kitchen. We were supposed to go fishing today. Why didn't he wake me? My ears were expecting to be greeted by Granddad's congratulating me of joining the world of the living. "Look at what just rose from the grave," he usually said. The kitchen was empty. I took a quick glance around. The living room was empty too. The blinds were open. So was Granddad's bedroom door. I walked over, knowing he wouldn't be in there. I just sensed it. I went to check on him anyway, just in case he wasn't feeling too well. He was, however, lying peacefully when I went to his room last night after being in the porch, so he should be up now. He wasn't there. His bed was neatly made, blankets drawn tight and then folded in on an angle at the corners of the mattress, military styled. I went back to my room, threw on a Megadeth t-shirt and a pair of ripped jean shorts, and returned to the kitchen. Something suddenly didn't feel right. I gazed out the window above the sink, expecting to see Granddad's truck. I didn't. Instead, there was my car. A half-rusted silver Toyota Camry parked outside, askew on the gravel driveway. What the? I raked my fingers through my hair. The taste of morning breath suddenly seemed stronger. I looked at my car again, this time noticing the dashboard littered with burger wrappers and beer labels. Granddad? I called into the cabin. Without putting on my shoes, I went out to my car, shouting for him all the way. I ran my head along the hood of the car and reached the driver's side door. The door was unlocked. I opened the door. My keys dangled from the ignition in the on position. Plopping myself down in the driver's seat, I turned the key back in the ignition and turned the car off. Then I tried to start the car. No go. Dead. Drained the battery. Confused, my eyes roamed over the messy dashboard, the passenger seat that had had a case of beer on it, the cigarette butts that had spilled from the ashtray, the butts of two joints stubbed out in a cup holder. How did my car get here? Did someone drive it here last night? How did all the booze get in here? Certainly not from anyone in my family. My dad gave up drinking, even socially. My mom never touched a drink in her life. My sister, Stephanie, was too young to drink, let alone drive a car. Granddad? No. Even if he did decide to be reckless and booze it up on the way back here, say if for whatever reason he drove his truck back to the city and came back here in my car early this morning, it still didn't explain the joints in the cup holder. I didn't think Granddad even knew what a joint was. And who would he get one from anyway? My thoughts were distracted when I heard the telephone ring from inside the cabin. Knowing I should answer it or get in trouble from Granddad if it was an important call, I got out of the car, closed the door, and walked to the cabin. My feet were suddenly sensitive to the prickly grass between the cabin and the car. As I passed the outhouse, I considered the possibility of Granddad being in there. About to go out to the outhouse instead of answering the phone, I stopped, reconsidered, then headed over to the cabin, picking up my pace. The phone had rang over 8 times. Whoever was calling hadn't given up yet. It had to be important. Inside, I picked up the old rotary phone mounted next to the refrigerator. "Hello?" "What are you doing there?" my mom asked. "What do you mean, what am I doing here?" I leaned up against the counter. "Granddad invited me up here yesterday." She cleared her throat. When she spoke, her voice was weak, concerned. "Robert, Granddad was in the hospital yesterday. He died last night." My inside suddenly felt empty. What was she talking about? Last night, Granddad and I... The ashtrays were gone from the table. I placed my palm on the countertop and pulled it away, feeling something dirty on my skin. My hand had a thin film of dust on it. I looked around the cabin. The couch in the living room, the chair, the TV stand, and the coffee table all had white blankets draped over them. Why I hadn't noticed them when I first got up. "Are you okay?" my mother asked. "Why are you out there?" I didn't respond, but instead looked out the window, past my car, and to the for sale sign staked in the ground beside the mailbox near the edge of the driveway. "Mom, I..." But I couldn't finish. My head felt as if my thoughts and memories were scattered like a filing cabinet ransacked by an intruder, the files dumped on the floor. My disbelief in my mother's claim of Granddad being dead faded a little and was replaced by the hollow pain of heartache. "Listen," Mom said, "just stay there and Dad and I will come out and get you." Okay, I said. My legs wobbled as if they were made of rubber, so I sat down at the table. About to say goodbye, I heard a ticking in the background, on the other end of the line. "What's that?" I asked. "What's what?" "That ticking. It's Granddad's metronome, back when he played the piano." "Granddad? Piano?" Mom went on. "Stephanie's going to play a song for Granddad's funeral. Grandmama insisted she practice with Granddad's metronome instead of her own, making it more special." I couldn't believe what was going on. "Granddad had that metronome beside his hospital bed during his last days," my mother said. "He said the rhythm from it calmed him down and made him less apprehensive about death. I'm surprised it still works, though. It's real old." "Why?" I asked, not really knowing why I asked. "Because," she said, "it stopped its beat when Granddad died. As if the beat was keeping him alive, and someone then decided it was time for him to go." I flashed back to the night before and how I stopped the metronome from ticking. Granddad's garbled wheezing stopped then, too. How could I have... If I did... I wasn't sure what I was thinking. I didn't kill him. But given last night, maybe I was somehow in a place outside of time, outside of reality. Needing to be alone, I say goodbye to my mom, She said she and Dad would be out here this afternoon. I told her that was fine and hung up. I went back to my room, grabbed a cigarette, and lit up. Here's to you, Granddad. Here's to you. And it's time for Story Behind the Story Time. So that one, the beat, it used to be called Me and Granddad. But I changed the title just to make it, I don't know why I changed it. I think it's just to kind of give it something more exciting or, you know, more intriguing, so to speak. But that story was written extremely early in my career. I would suggest probably somewhere in the third or fourth short story I ever wrote. That cabin cited in the story is a real place. It didn't have the fake log cabin exterior. It did have the paneling. I changed it for the story. But it was true that a long time ago, on a certain side of the family, there was a family cabin with my grandpa being kind of like the owner, and then everybody kind of chipping in to help bring the place to life and put things together and all that stuff. And the other thing, too, that was part of that story was, yeah, the outhouse. That place had an outhouse, and there was no bathroom, like bathroom. You know, and we're talking in terms of time, late 80s kind of thing, right? So, you know, cabins back then weren't as modern as they are now. It was, to me, I mean, when people go to the lake now, too, by the way, like, I've seen cabins, and man, it's like, why are you going there outside of the exterior environment for your incentive? Because, like, you're living not really in a cabin per se. You're living like in another house. But anyway, that's another topic. Point is, so they had this cabin, and yeah, they had that outhouse. And as a kid, I dreaded having to go to the bathroom because that outhouse stunk, and I knew what was, you know, in there beneath the seat. And it was just, as a kid, the first exposure, right? So you just, it's gross, it's horrible, and yet you have to do that. They did have sort of a mini porta potty in the cabin for the kids for nighttime use, but other than that, and then that would get dumped out in the morning into the real outhouse. But anyway, the whole thing was a real place, and even the layout that I described in the story was how the place was. That back porch that was in the story with all the stuff in it, there was a back porch that was always full of crap. Basically, in there, it was sort of little porch rooms, you know, and then it would lead out into the back property. And then that mention of, him stepping out onto the grass and feeling the prickliness on his feet. I don't know what kind of grass my family had. Even grass could apply to this situation here. What did they grasp as reality here? Anyway, you know, what they chose for grass for the property, because that grass was prickly as heck. Like, we're talking like needle style, you know, and I hated like being barefoot on that thing. Like, I would always ensure I had either sandals or shoes on because it just really sucked. But anyway, the point of the story was I just basically want to take like an element from real life and turn it into something. And of course, regarding the story aspect, I wanted to, at the time, again, early writers, right, we all try to be brilliant, and it's, you know, it's a good effort. I mean, it's a good practice in that sense, but, you know, from a mental exercise. But at the same time, you know, maybe you should be learning the craft a bit better. So this, but then I see some of the ways it was written that, frankly, I wouldn't do nowadays. But the idea was to do something clever. The idea was, what is reality? You know, what was Robbie's influence on his grandfather's death, if anything? You know, was he boozed up and stoned out and imagined the whole scenario with the tick, tick, ticking? You know, that was sort of the thing. And this is kind of one of those stories where you kind of let the reader decide, you know, what really happened that time. Was he boozed up, or was there some sort of supernatural outside of time experience that he had? You know, this is one of those reader decide stories. So then, yeah, there's that. And that pretty much covers it as to, you know, why I wrote it. I wrote it for fun, and didn't really have any publication aspirations for it. And then lastly, a fellow writer from way back when self-publishing was new, and we're talking like 2003, 2004, A fellow writer actually offered to publish it on his website, and I was like, I mean, again, this is at the time, this is where writers having websites was a new thing too, right? So I was like, sure. So yeah, he put it up there. But yeah, you know, it's basically the story behind the story. It's basically me to sort of do like the family element, to reveal a bit of family history through fiction, and also revisit a place that was long sold long ago, and relive some childhood memories in a way. My grandpa was, my real grandpa, like, was never a smoker. If he did at some point, I never knew about it. He had other issues, other vices, but he passed away a few years ago. It was a dementia situation, so I felt really bad for him because he went from, you know, a vibrant, regular person, so to speak, to basically someone stuck in a chair staring off into space and unable to move. And it was really hard to watch because I always wondered, you know, like when you're in that state, like what's going through your head, you know, like when you have those lucid moments, but your body doesn't want to work, you know, are you, I don't know, I can only imagine like what it's like to be trapped inside yourself. And that would be really frustrating, especially when you know that you used to be able to say, move your hand or lift your arm or whatever. And no matter what you try, you can't, you know. And yeah, that's, you know, I don't know, upon reflection, I think, yeah, we need to kind of consider that factor when we deal with people with dementia and Alzheimer's and that sort of stuff. You know, give them some compassion, like, big time, because, yeah, to be a prisoner inside yourself, and then your mind, you know, your current mind drifting into the past mind, drifting back to the current, to the past, and so on, I mean, that's got to be tough. You know, so from their perspective, yeah, like, anyway, point is, if you have someone with that in your life, show them some love. A lot of love, a lot of grace, a lot of patience, and yeah, kind of segueing here. But anyway, I'll zip it for now. Just stay tuned for after the credits, and we'll do something fun then. Okay, bye. It's after the credits. And in movies, what is that about, right? We do a little cliffhanger leading into the next thing. So, as per this podcast sort of pattern, we've been doing, you know, a series of like monster stuff or horror stuff, and then we do a superhero thing. And some more horror stuff and monster stuff, and then some superhero thing. And guess what's happening next episode? That's right. Axiom Man is back, and we're going to do the superhero thing. But as a teaser, Axiom Man has to fight something with sharp teeth, sharp claws. What could it be? I'll let you think about it throughout the week. And stay tuned for next episode, because it's time for the heroes part of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters story time with AP Fuchs. So in the meantime, have a great week. Enjoy yourself. Take some time out for yourself as well. It's important, self-care, people. Okay, this is also talking to myself. We all need to slow down and self-care sometimes, so let's do that, okay? But in the meantime, yeah, what's going to happen next week with Axiom Man against something with sharp teeth? Ponder. See you then.